It's a Thursday edition of Smith and Jones right here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. And we get you set for another busy day of sports in the National Hockey League postseason, the NBA, and of course, Major League Baseball as well, with the Toronto Blue Jays fresh off a victory last night over the Chicago White Sox, getting set for another tilt against the Sox tonight, before then moving on to the Boston Red Sox in a four-game set, and we can discuss that perhaps a little bit later on. In the NBA postseason, as I mentioned, going full swing last night, Jonesy, with just one game on tap, but a big-time decisive victory for the Phoenix Suns, and we will get into that in probably about 10 minutes' time or so when C.J. Miles joins us. He was supposed to be on the show yesterday, but got tied up with some personal stuff. We'll get C.J. on the show today, and then later on in the program, Kevin Arnovitz from ESPN on the program as well. Not sure where you want to start with things today, Jonesy. We can kind of bounce around a couple of different things off the top, but one thing that we should touch on perhaps, even though we are going to discuss a lot of NBA over the course of this show today, it was announced yesterday that the MVP, indeed, and this is, I throw it over to you because you've been, you know, more outspoken than me on this in terms of the MVP and maybe who it should be, who's deserving, what goes into the criteria of who is an MVP, and the Joker gets it. Nikola Jokic is the MVP this year in the NBA, but right now his team's down 0-2 in the second round to the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, they are, Eric, and I just find it interesting. I, you know, and we had Jared Greenberg on, and we had Howard Beck on, and they both staunchly supported the candidacy of Nikola Jokic. And I don't want people to think that I'm anti-Jokic. He is, I mean, he's a terrific offensive player. His numbers are off the chart, and I don't have a problem with him being the MVP. But I'm looking at it, I guess, a little bit more critically from a basketball standpoint, where I think the MVP should be able to, I'm old fashioned, maybe should be able to be a solid two-way player. And, you know, Chris Paul has done all of that and has impacted winning. And because his numbers aren't crazy, they're good. It's not like a guy's averaging 6 points a game and I'm championing his cause for MVP. I mean, you know, he's averaging in the teens, up there in assists, always one of the leaders in steals and all defensive potential. And then I look at his impact, not just in Phoenix, but wherever he's been. So, and I get it. And look, people are going to point to guys, hey, Jonesy, what about Steph Curry? What about Steve Nash? What about Kevin Durant? These guys that were off the charts offensively and made other people better and won for their teams. I get it. I'm not arguing with those. But I'm just saying in a year like this, and there were a lot of people that disqualified James Harden before he got injured and couldn't play. Oh, because of what went down in Houston. Well, that has nothing to do with his play. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but things don't always work out the way you want. Not everybody can be the late, great Kobe Bryant and play your entire franchise, your entire career with one franchise. Matter of fact, people that have been following us for years knew that on our show on NBA TV Canada, Double Dribble, you and I had a bet that I would buy you that Kobe jersey if he went to Chicago. Remember that, E?
Oh, I remember it quite well, yep. I was convinced it was going to happen.
Yeah, so and when so was everybody else till Phil Jackson got a hold of Kobe and convinced him otherwise. So, you know, that stuff with James Harden, it doesn't impact how he plays. And he went to Brooklyn and sacrificed and made that team better. And I guarantee you, if he was on the court, their chances of winning, as much as people say, oh, three stars have to figure it out, to the point of Howard and Jared and people that we've spoken to. You know, as Hubie Brown used to say to me, we were sitting around at dinner, Hubie say, hey, come on, this game is not about stopping people. You do have to score points to win. Stopping people helps, but the ball has to go in the basket. And he's right. So if Steph and Nash and Durant and Jokic are filling the basket or helping other guys fill the basket, it is going to resonate with voters. So I just looked at Chris Paul, whose team finished ahead of Jokic's team and probably met all the criteria and then some. He would have got my vote, and maybe I would have been, you know, chastised by the greater media who were into the numbers of Jokic. But in the first two games, albeit at home, it's playing out. And I'm just, you know, I'm looking at a guy like Luka, who people say, you know, he's a terrific player, but like he's young, he's got a lot to learn, but he's like a whole bunch of other guys that have gone before him putting up great offensive numbers, from James Harden all the way back to Wilt Chamberlain. And those numbers don't translate into W's. It's about winning. Somewhere Mike Singletary is in my head. I want winners. That's what it's about.
Let me ask you this: when it comes to I want winners, and I may be segueing a little bit off this, Jonesy, but it plays into something that you and I talked about, I believe, late last week, and I just saw earlier before coming to air a tweet that kind of jogged my memory of this as well. When you think about the top players in the National Hockey League, and the star players in the National Hockey League, at least in terms of current, and not that there aren't still stars alive that are still in the postseason, but Connor McDavid gone on the sidelines, Austin Matthews on the sidelines, Sidney Crosby on the sidelines, all of them out golfing right now, not even still alive. In the NBA, same thing, Jonesy, LeBron James gone. The list goes on of top-tier guys. Yeah, Giannis is still in there and Kawhi is still in there, but I just mentioned the MVP is down 0-2. Giannis is down 0-2 as well. You don't have... even if you look at the Boston Celtics and the 1-2 punch of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, and the list goes on of a lot of the star guys, with clearly LeBron being at the top of that list, not in the playoffs in the hockey, as I just mentioned some of the names. Do you think that that's good or bad? Because it also then plays into the conversations we've had about do fans want to see teams year after year where it's stars year after year, or do they want to see the parity of new champions and new squads? Because you look at the NBA as an example, we can't say it as much with who's still alive in the National Hockey League. There is more history with some of the teams that are still alive. Most notably, coming just top of mind with, although it's been a long time, the Montreal Canadiens or the New York Islanders, even with the history of Stanley Cups and championships that those organizations have had. But in the NBA, what is it, Jonesy? I believe 6 of the 8 teams remaining in the NBA playoffs have never won a championship, and 2 haven't won. Right. I mean, the last time we had a champion of the teams that are remaining was, I believe, almost 40 years ago. So
Philly in 83,
Do we care, or is it good or bad that there are a lot of stars missing and there are a lot of big teams, sexier teams on both sides of the hockey and basketball equation that are out? And is it a good or a bad thing? Because are we guilty, just even being as broadcasters, media, of looking at that bottom line of what's good for the company, good for the rights, good for the viewers, good for the advertising, as opposed to just the purity of the game and the competition itself?
I'm the latter, E. I'm old-fashioned. I'm a sports guy. I'm going to watch. The casual fan might be recruited by seeing the stars, but I'm going to watch. And, whether it's San Antonio and Detroit or, Steph against LeBron, I'm going to watch. I'm going to watch a Stanley Cup final. I wish my team was in it. I don't have a horse in the race, but I'm going to watch. And to me, it doesn't matter. And I personally think it's good that there are six teams in that have never won before. Nothing or no one person is bigger than the game. And I reflect back to my youth in watching, the Knicks with Walt Frazier and, oh no, Walt Earl Monroe, they're retiring. Oh no, the game's not going to be the same. Oh, wait a minute. Then along comes Dr. J, and that era with Dr. J and Larry, it ushers into the Larry Bird, Magic Johnson. There was nothing. You grew up on it, E. There was nothing like the Lakers and the Celtics on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. It was riveting. It was riveting. And it was two of the best players. They were opposite in race. They were opposite in the way their styles, the teams were. They were opposite on the other side of the country. It was perfect theater. And then, like, Bird hurt his back, and he wasn't the same. And then it's like, oh, man, this is going to – man, what's happening? The game's going to go downhill. Oh, no, wait. Along comes Michael Jordan and the Bulls, or along comes Isaiah and the Pistons. And as I said, there will always be the next one. And the kind of the beat goes on. So I'm okay with it. I'd love to see Chris Paul get a championship. I can see it would be okay if Giannis got a title. I don't know how he's gonna get one down 0-2, but I'm okay with that. I'm okay with it. And to me, nothing's bigger than the game. So I'm going to watch, and on to the next group of stars or great players that are emerging.
Well, and there's a lot of them right now, right? When we think about, you know, just even at a quick glance, you think tonight you've got game two going between the Jazz and the Clippers, Donovan Mitchell and Trae Young, what he's doing in Atlanta as well. I mean, you've got some young stars, that sort of next wave of players that are right there. I mean, I don't know if we could even include a Ben Simmons or a Joel Embiid in part of that next wave in a sense. They've been around a little bit longer, but there are a lot of the younger guys that are maybe going to have to, well, not maybe, they're going to have to carry the flag. Because, you know, as great as Chris Paul is, as great as LeBron James is, and even Kawhi Leonard and whatnot, I mean, we're talking about guys that are not necessarily in the twilight, but they're on the back nine, right? I mean, they might only be on nine or ten. They might still have years ahead of them, but they're clearly not young dudes anymore. And you just think about who's going to carry that torch into the next generation for that next person to come along, like you were just talking about, right? There's always somebody else coming. There's always somebody coming down the pipeline, and that's what the league needs, whether we're talking about the NBA or whether we're talking about the National Hockey League as well. I threw Sidney Crosby's name out earlier, and he's the old head now with the younger dudes and Connor McDavid and Auston Matthews. But even then, again, they're not there to carry the flag right now, but there are other dudes in the National Hockey League that are doing that right now that are still alive in the postseason and still trying to make a name for themselves. So I guess that's just the, I don't know, I don't want to sound cheesy about it, but the circle of life of pro sports and just kind of churning out the names, churning out the bodies and the talent.
There'll always be another one, E. There always will be. And just when, I mean, there are guys that are make impressions on you the way back in my day, you know, when they brought the dunk back in, Dr. J was wowing crowds and guys like David Thompson and, you know, terrific NCAA games. And it's impressionable in your youth because you see it through a different lens. You know, your focus, your prism is different. But then you're taken into the love of the game. And, you know, as the guys say, you know, we got a guest on the line. And I always looked at him as one of those guys. He just loves to hoop, just loves to play. And it's about the game. And that's the big thing.
Well, the guy that Jonesy's speaking of right now, former Toronto Raptor, longtime NBA guard, joining us right here on Smith & Jones, CJ Miles. CJ, thanks for the time as always.
No problem, man. Thanks again for having me.
Hey, CJ, let me just, I don't know if you got a sense of what we were talking about there. We're basically just discussing the ideas of you know, what kind of goes into being a fan and looking at it from sort of all angles. And I say to you, even as a fan, let alone as a player, us as fans, but also broadcasters, trying to look beyond, are we enticed? Are we teased? Is our appetite wet for the superstars and for the dynasties? Or can we appreciate also the teams that maybe don't have as many stars or don't have that dynasty or haven't won a championship in 40 years or maybe ever, and still finding the storylines in that and finding the glory in that and finding the intrigue in that as well? As a fan of the game, CJ, not just as a player, how do you approach just watching the games and still finding enjoyment knowing, hey, okay, LeBron James is sidelined, but man, and I'm just pulling an example out here, Donovan Mitchell is a hell of a player that's still fun to watch.
Yeah.
How's it
so
for you?
Funny. It's so funny. I was going to use those two names and what I was thinking in my answer to ask you the question. But, when you think about, for me, as a player that's played from 3 years old to the highest level, the way I look at the game is a little different than the person as an average fan, because there's people that are fans of LeBron and not actually fans of the game, if that makes sense. So when you're looking at it from an entertainment standpoint, there's revenue and there's all these things that go when it's strictly entertainment for somebody. So they're looking at it like, I want to see LeBron. I don't want to see the game. You know what I mean? So they don't want to see the kid that's got a promising future and things like that. They just want to see the person they want to see, the person that entertains, that draws them to it. They're not so much looking at like, man, this guy could be the next LeBron, unless it's been a storyline that's been fed to them. And I think that one of the things for me as a fan of the game this year with the playoffs, like you say, Donovan Mitchell is an outstanding young basketball player. And I think for him to be able to have this platform and show it to everybody is how you create the people that look at him like they look at LeBron. So then you get to get both sides of it.
Yeah, no, CJ, I get that. I love what you're saying there. And that's where Eric and I were talking about, like you, we see the game differently and we're fans of the game, and it's
exactly.
But it's why the networks, the league, people say, I mean, I'm watching golf and they're like, oh, I don't want to see Tiger. He's 15 shots back. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, but but he's Tiger. Like people want to see. And I'm like, I'm with you. I mean, I know there are people that the ratings will be down because LeBron's not in or whatever, but that doesn't mean, like you said, Donovan Mitchell couldn't be the guy. And you've played in Utah. Yeah, yeah. You know that place well. Man, that place was gassed up over game one.
No, yo, it's. I was just talking to, so I was working out, and I was talking to my trainer, but I was like, one of the things that always will resonate with me is the way that gym is at this time of year. That arena is different than anywhere else because the way it's built, the crowd feels like it's on top of you. At the jump ball, there's all the smoke still in the air from the pregame stuff they're doing, and the smell is different. The feel is different. It's so loud, you can't hear the referee's whistle, and I haven't been too many places that match that. So to be able to get that and have a team like them, Sixth Man of the Year, a guy that was third in voting also for Sixth Man of the Year, Donovan Mitchell, a Defensive Player of the Year on it, and we're talking about we don't want to see them play. That doesn't make sense to me as a fan of the game because you would think you would want to see guys that are as good as anybody at the game play the game if you're a fan of the game. I'm sorry, it sounds redundant the way I'm saying it, but that's the only way I can put it. And then you get a guy like Trae Young as a fan of the game. I want to see if he is Ice Trae for real. I want to see if he gets on this stage and he's still the same guy that he was in game 34 now. Mm-hmm. Because that lets me know if, you know, I want to know that. Because he got so much promise and so much talent. I want to see guys blossom into that. And then you can know if the league's in good hands or not, too.
Speaking with C.J. Miles, former Toronto Raptor, longtime NBA guard. C.J., I think that's well said on all fronts. I mean, listen, just you brought up the Trae Young thing, and I think, Jones, it was yesterday we were talking about this as well. The thing that I like seeing as well, and again, maybe this is just the fan in me, C.J., I like seeing the personality as well. I mean, I don't necessarily think that it's got to be WWE and cutting promos and having heels and all this stuff and whatever else, but I love to see the theatrics and the showmanship of hushing the crowd and then being able to back it up, too. Yeah. Yes.
Take a bow,
Giving real-off Steph, Reggie Miller-type vibes. Like, and that's part of, like, when you think about what memories stick in your head, the guys that get to talk it and walk it and prove themselves and do it. And, like, Reggie was a guy who was in a small market in Indiana, and that team got good and got to get on that big stage. And you can see all that come out of him because he's like, I've been waiting on this. Like, this is what I was built for, really. You just didn't know that. And that's what Trae, like, proven. He's like, I was built for this moment. And I've been waiting to get to it for myself and for you because all you people that said I was too small, this, that, and the third, that helped me. So now I get to give you this and prove to myself that I'm really who I say I am. So he's in heaven.
Yeah, yeah. CJ, it's, Eric and I are. I mean, we're ready to jump in on that Luka trade debate. I mean, Luka could be a generational player, but I mean, right now Trae got one series win and he's tied in round two, and Luka's at home. Luka's not dancing. He's waiting for another record. I mean, that's another story, but. I want to go back to Utah. I want to go back. I'll let you comment on that. I want to go back to Utah and Donovan Mitchell and why he didn't get more consideration for the MVP. So give me your take on Trae and Luka and why the best player on the team with the best record in the NBA got absolutely zero consideration for MVP.
Yeah. The Luka thing, I think right now is just style of play. And surrounding and the way they're playing right now, they got Porzingis over there. They don't really use him like a second star. They use him like another guy who's able to make some shots, kind of almost. You know what I mean? Like Luka looks like James Harden did in Houston right now. That's what that looks like.
Yes, yes.
And we know that formula. We know where that gets you. It gets that guy a bunch of big numbers and getting to a certain spot where like, all right, we need more than me doing this to get over the hump. That's what that is. Trae is doing the same type of things with guys around him that are playing the game, making plays for him, making plays by themselves. He's got Gallo out there. He's got McDonovich. He's got even Herter's growing. They got so many guys that play the game like he plays the game the right way. Not saying guys in Dallas don't, just some of those guys aren't capable of doing the things that they're doing in Atlanta. And that's the difference right now. And that's why Trae's reaping the benefits of having his skill set and those guys' skill sets. And then Donovan Mitchell, we know the case with the markets too, for one. Like, we know, like, we're just talking about the entertainment. We know how that drives and how that has a little bit to do with it too. He missed some games also. But I think, and he's not very loud either. So when you're not very loud by going about doing it, and you're in a place that's not very loud, as far as like the way stuff is pushing everybody's faces, it kind of tends to kind of do that. And that's the thing I respect about it, is like, he didn't come out and cry about it. He didn't come out and he just kept doing what he was doing, because it shows you what's important to him. And all that other stuff usually comes when you win. He's like, now that I'm winning, now you want to talk to me. Yeah, we can talk about it now. Because he'll be able to go like Shaq does when he talks to Steve Nash and said, that MVP trophy you owe me. He'll be able to make jokes like that at some point, because he should be in consideration.
Speaking with C.J. Miles, longtime NBA guard. C.J., so many different directions I could go with this, and I'm trying to find a natural transition here. Maybe the most natural I can think of is, we're talking about the young players, the young stars, the budding stars, and then you look across, not that there aren't some good young pieces as well, but a very veteran-laden, veteran-dependent, and it's pretty easy to be veteran-dependent when your veterans are Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Blake Griffin. That team, man, I tell you, I'm guilty of being one of those people thinking there's not enough ball to go around. They're going to fall on their face at some point. Man, they look like a wrecking crew right now.
I think the biggest thing with that team is that the three guys you mentioned, especially before Blake got there, those guys are somewhat basketball purists at this point in the stage. Like, they're interested in playing the game the right way. So, like, the numbers they get are gaudy numbers at nights, but that's because they're so good, the right play is for them to do what they're doing. But, like, one of the plays that stuck out to me, I think not the last game of game four, is, like, watching them, the way they move the ball. So, like, it still seems equal opportunity. I saw Kyrie pass the ball to Brown in the corner, who's not a shooter. And Kyrie had time to shoot the ball. Meaning, like, he's just making the right play because he knows that guy's going to make the right play. So now we have no problems with the hierarchy when it's time. Everybody knows. They fall in line. Everybody knows KD is who he is. He's probably the greatest scorer ever. Everybody knows Kyrie who is, Harden who he is. So, like, when everybody feels like they're being treated equal, we can see everything clearly. I don't have to worry about proving myself to get this, that, and the third, like, from the game. The game is giving it to me because we're playing the right way. And I think that's why they're so great, because they lead by doing the right things. Not, I'm Kevin Durant, give me the ball, get out of the way. Guys are willingly moving out of the way because that's Kevin Durant, and the best play is for me to give him the ball.
CJ, what? Give me your take on Milwaukee tonight. One is, if they lose this series, is Coach Bud in trouble? Two, I mean, you've been in a situation where you're it's desperation time. Like, you are literally. Nobody's ever come back from 3-0. So you are, tonight is the game. You are literally fighting for the series tonight. Take me inside the locker room and then give me your thoughts on Coach Bud as well.
The first thing that I got to make sure that my guy, like, if I'm going in there, if I'm a guy on the team or the coach or whatever, my guys aren't looking at this as what you just said. Nobody's ever did this. Nobody's ever did that. Because you're already fighting the mental battle of the three-headed monster that's over there. Or four, and count Blake, and it could just be three if James doesn't play, which he probably would. I wouldn't play him because we don't need him, so why not have him rest as much as you can for the next round? Anyway, and then as far as Bud, I think that's hard because they are so good, and they've been so good. And I think it's almost like with the it's pretty much Coach Case again.
Yes.
Like, it's the same situation. Like, you just get to a point where maybe trying the same thing over and over is insanity. So, yes, we've reached our level, and that doesn't take away from what you do, and you're not great, but something's got to change. We made the Drew Holiday change, and now we're just pretty much getting to the same space. So now you're looking around like, what's the next thing that we need to shake up? And I think they just got to and granted, there's some guys struggling. I think Brooke is really not taking advantage of his size enough. I think Giannis' expansion of his game is an experiment, but, like, if I'm the modern version of Shaq, what do I need to change? You know, like, we'll figure the rest out. Like, make them guard me every time, put the pressure on them every time. Chris Middleton and Drew and the other perimeter guys can figure that out. But I think that that's not a fault. I get it, and I'm not pointing fingers at it. But I think at this point, at winning time, if I'm him, I'm on the rim every single time I can be on it. Like, forget all that. They're not guarding me. Well, go take, run them over if you got to one time. But I really think that it's a tough situation. Like, I think you just got to go into it as we are a really good team. Remember that first.
Hey, CJ, let me ask you if you're able to kind of give us some insight into this. What you were just talking about, just a quick assessment there of Giannis. How open are guys, or is maybe the best answer is maybe it comes down to the individual and everybody's different. I get that, et cetera, et cetera. How open are guys to criticism, opinion, constructive criticism, advice, guidance from teammates and not from the coaches? If you wanted to get in Giannis's ear and said, you need to do X, Y, Z, or you should try to do X, Y, Z, how willing are guys to hear that from a teammate as opposed to that coming from a coach?
It's a tricky thing because it's all in approach at some point. Like sometimes, like in a situation like this, I think it might be more from a player than a coach because you're in a position where you're like really deep in the trenches right now and you're upset, we're down. Having somebody that's out there with you actually doing it will weigh a little bit more. Not saying he's not listening to his coach or this and that, but just because I can tap him on the butt over and over and over. Like, you know what I mean? I can get to him in real time, not just in the timeout, not just in the dead ball. I can always make eye contact if we had a conversation before the game just to reinforce what we've been talking about, what we know is going to work. I think the great ones are receptive about everything. That's why they're great, because they keep on taking the information to keep building, to keep being good, to keep adding. And I think he is one of those guys. But I think it's got to come from both sides. It's got to be Drew, Chris, Lopez, anybody. P.J. Tucker is another guy who's a big voice that people gravitate to that's got to be on him a little bit. But I don't know Giannis personally, so I don't know how you would say it. Some people respond to the rah-rah and jump at them and like, oh, to motivate them. And some people, you got to be gentle with it. It just depends. So it's tough.
CJ, we appreciate the time on the show today, man. Great insight. We always love having you on and look forward to chatting again, hopefully before the end of the finals, man. All the best to you and your family.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, man. Thank you guys for having me, as always. It's fun.
CJ Miles, former Toronto Raptor, longtime NBA guard. Great insight coming there, Jonesy, from CJ.
He was always a guy when he played here in Toronto that you could go to for a conversation just like this. I mean, you know, people just heard us talk with him on the radio, but you could always chat to CJ. I mean, whether he was the guy that was available, quote unquote, at practice or not, you sidle up to him and say, hey, let me ask you something, man. And all of a sudden, you have a great conversation going.
Mm-hmm. No, you're bang on with that, Jonesy. No doubt about that. No doubt about that. We'll be getting him back before the end of the finals, CJ Miles. And we're actually going to continue this conversation on a similar tone, talking about carrying that torch into the next generation, the next wave for the NBA, whenever LeBron decides to hang him up, whether that's in a year or whether it's in 5 years. Either way, somebody's got to be there to carry the torch, and it sure looks like it could be the likes of a Trae Young and a Luka Doncic and others. We will discuss that specifically. There's an article up on ESPN.com that's been there for a couple of days, and we will dig into it a little bit deeper with the writer, Kevin Arnovitz, when we continue on Smith & Jones right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you here till the top of the hour. Baseball Central takes over at 2 p.m. with Jeff Blair, Kevin Barker, Jays prospect Austin Martin on the program today, and later on during writer's block as well, Lou Lamorello. We continue right here on Smith & Jones. Thanks again to CJ Miles for joining us to start the show today, and we kind of continue that conversation in a sense. We were talking a lot about carrying the torch into the next generation, the young stars. We mentioned Luka Doncic. We mentioned Trae Young, and that's going to be a major chunk of the conversation right now with Kevin Arnovitz from ESPN. And you can find the article. It went up a couple of days ago. The headline is, Why Luka Doncic and Trae Young Represent the next generation of NBA superstars. And again, Kevin Arnovitz, the writer, joining us right now. Kevin, thanks for the time as always.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Kevin, I want to start just taking a little bit of a piece, a couple of lines, and I'll summarize them quickly for the audience. But one of the things you wrote, there have been only three superstars in the past 15 years who, as individual brands, materially drive the engine for the NBA commerce: Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, and Steph Curry. And as you know, for the first time since 2005, the conference semifinals in the NBA playoffs without such an icon in the conference finals at this point. None of those guys. And you don't have the superstars of the big teams like the Lakers, as you note, the Celtics, the Bulls, the Knicks, the Heat, the Warriors, etc. How ready is the league for the next wave, the next step? Whether it's Luka, whether it's Trae Young, whether it's Donovan Mitchell, how ready is the league? How ready are those individuals to start putting their mark and planting their flag alongside some of those stars that you bring up in your piece?
I mean, we're going to have to see, right? And this has always been sort of an interesting feature of the NBA, unlike, say, in the United States, the NFL, right? Where, you know, yeah, you've got your Tom Brady's, but really it's the league as a product. Doesn't matter if it's Jacksonville versus whoever, right? It's going to sell. Whereas in the NBA, it's very much been dependent on individual brands and the Kobe, the LeBron, the Stephs. And that's great because those guys command huge audiences in China, overseas. Television doesn't matter. If they're on, you watch. But it's also problematic in the sense that there are times when they're not on, that the league is really, really struggling to find viewers on a Thursday night, even when one of its alleged stars, and I'm not trying to pick on like Jimmy Butler, you know, but there were nights when like new in his Miami Heat days last year before COVID, where like they drew 700,000 viewers nationally in a country of 330 million south of the border. And that's not good programming when Wheel of Fortune can beat that by 15 times on a Wednesday night. So this is a real challenge for the league. And how ready are they to answer your question? We're going to find out. And because part of it is it's dependent on circumstance and luck. Like, guys have to get like big shots at big moments to become iconic, like kind of the Steph winning streak, the 50-point game in Madison Square Garden, like all the things that build a guy's mythology. Some of that's luck, but some of it is very deliberate marketing and promoting and sort of introducing the league, or rather introducing the world to, hey, if you're not watching this guy, why aren't you? Because let us tell you why he is amazing and it is worth 2.5 hours of your time and a lot of your attention. And we're going to find out how ready the league is, because this is sort of their big assignment right now. Those guys are not walking. Those guys are not getting bigger, Steph and LeBron. They're getting older. And they're going to have to be replaced with guys who, not like, it's not Kevin Durant, who's a wonderful superstar and a champion, and James Harden, but those guys don't move commerce the way these other guys do.
Speaking with Kevin Arnovitz from ESPN. Kevin, we might have lost Jonesy for a second.
We'll get I'm here. I'm here. He's sorry.
In a moment. Go ahead, Jonesy. Go ahead.
I'm here. Kev, you just knocked me back, because back in the early days, the network executives would tell me that darts, some fat guys in a bar throwing darts, had better ratings than the NBA, which was probably true back in 1985 and 1986. So you just gave me a gut punch there. But Eric and I have been talking about, as we look at it this year with some of those guys missing and the casual fan, I mean, I liken it to golf. I'm watching golf no matter what. I'm watching basketball no matter what. But the casual fan wants to see, as you said, Steph or LeBron. And the casual golf fan wants to see Tiger. What does the league do? Because I'm all for Chris Paul winning a title, or you know, James Harden getting his first one, or you know, the process and Philadelphia's tanking coming full circle and producing a title. I'm okay with that, but then I'm a hardcore fan. What about the casual fan? Are they going to jump on board with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question. It's really it's a two-part question. One is, hey, the model that I just described, where these individual, the larger-than-life, superhuman guys per generation drive the conversation and really are the marketing vehicle for the league, right? Like, that's a model. Like, we don't have to do it. Hey, there's got to be a Steph, LeBron, Kobe, MJ before him kind of guy. Maybe Iverson sort of flirted with that role, but not really. Or Does the league just need to get a lot better at marketing the league as a whole? Maybe getting teams rather than individuals is sort of somebody that you want to tune into. And that's harder because I think, you know, we are a celebrity culture, and it's hard to sort of just, you know, it's really hard just to market a league abstractly or this team, because ultimately it does drill down to, okay, but who's on the team? Tell me the person I need to come see. But, you know, the league really has cast its lot in the we are going to be superstar driven. And I think, it's hard. But, I mean, maybe the answer is to your point, hey, the casual fan is just not going to show up for this guy or that guy. But what if we just try to convince the casual fan that the NBA product for 2.5 hours is just the best live show in town on your TV? You know, don't put in that show you're binge watching, watch this live. And I think that's really, I mean, and by the way, what I'm talking about is not unique to the NBA or even sports, right? I mean, Everyone is clamoring for everybody's attention. It is just not the world that the three of us grew up in, right? Where, like, I was a kid who, you know, after you got done with your homework and you cleared the table and you did everything else, it was like, all right, what's the best sporting event on a Tuesday night? Like, I happened to grow up in Atlanta, so it was like, all right, do the Hawks have a game? Do the Braves have a game? You know, is there a big Monday, a big ACC thing? You know, whatever it was. And I mean, I laugh now at what I would settle for some nights. I mean, I can't believe that, like, I would watch a Purdue-Ohio State game. But you guys know, like, if it was the best thing on, it was the best thing on. What am I going to do? Yeah, no, tonight is not a great NBA game, okay? I'm stuck with this college game. But I did it, right? Like, now there is no excuse. No one will settle for anything because you got, like, 17 streaming services. So the NBA is living in this world, which is why, like, I think it's a fascinating moment. No LeBron, no Steph. No Lakers, like no Knick Bulls, you know, it's all these teams and these cities that no one knows, you know, and it's just going to be fascinating to see what emerges. And I think something will. Like, Trae Young is a really compelling guy who clearly understands stage presence as an NBA star, like those elites understand stage presence. There's clearly, he's got that in his DNA, and it'll be very curious to see if this series goes on, if they're able to knock off Philly. Like, does the country, they love little guys who can beat the big guys with guile and shooting, and, you know, and, like, he's an interesting guy to watch for that reason, even if he's not an historically attractive team or market.
Speaking with Kevin Arnovitz from ESPN. Kevin, you just touched on where I wanted to go with this. And I she may even be listening right now, so I got to make sure I say this nicely and respectfully and everything else. I'm using my 70-year-old mother as an example. She has no idea, I'm assuming, who Trae Young is. But a year from now, 2 years from now, because she likes watching sports and she loves watching the Toronto Raptors, and she certainly knows who LeBron James and Steph Curry are, but I'm going to guess she doesn't know who Trae Young is. How much does the bravado, the personality, the showmanship, and this is something we just discussed with CJ Miles in our first segment, how much does that play into? You have to be able to back it up. You can't just be out there shushing a crowd and bowing and mugging for the camera and acting like you've got that swag and then have no game. You got to be able to back it up, and so far he is backing up, but how much does that build into the aura of building a superstar and thus building a marketing plan around a superstar and trying to make him this household name that the woman in Toronto, let alone the woman in Atlanta or Miami or Madrid, is going to know the way they know a Curry, a LeBron, etc.?
You know, it's funny you use that same parallel because I call this my mom test. Right, because I have a 70-year-old mother too, exactly, and she knows Steph, LeBron, and Kobe by first name. She might recognize that Durant or Harden guy, but probably not. Right, like that is the level of star we're talking about—the one-name star that it doesn't matter even if you're not a basketball fan, you know. Right, and I think that showmanship is great. I mean, you know, it's funny. I mean, I think, you know, there are a lot of purists around who don't like those antics. Like, no. The NBA needs those antics. I mean, you do. This is the new world, and again, to have the bravado, and again, to do it in New York, the stage presence, to back it up, to just control the game. And, you know, I noticed the other night, you know, when Trae wasn't on the floor for 5 minutes, you know, but they were real nip and tuck in the third quarter. He goes and sits. They're down 4. He comes back. They're down 18. Like, that kind of star where you're counting, like with Luka back in the Clippers series, where you're counting down the minutes. When's he going to get back in the game? When's he going to get back in the game? Right. How long can they stand for him not to be back in the game? And you're almost thinking about the guy even when he's not on the floor. And I think that's the sort of level of star we are. But, like, again, it a lot of circumstance has to play into it. Like, the NBA probably needs the Hawks as much as Philly's a slightly larger market and a more recognizable market right now with Embiid. You know, if I'm the NBA, I'm rooting for Trae. And I say the NBA, I'm not talking about the league office, so they should, you know, what I'm talking about is generally people whose vested interest is in the material success of the NBA. And that means having stars that you can sell and export. I'd be really hoping that Trey can continue the sort of exploits he had in New York, because I just think you're going to need a young guy like that. You're going to need a little guy who's, you know, David against Goliath, doing crazy things, the shots from 37 feet, finding guys with acrobatic pick and roll sets and whatnot, and who can then just piss off the road crowd, loves nothing more than enraging, you know, 15,000 New Yorkers, or, you know, Philadelphia is probably one of the most hostile fan bases in all of sports. You need those guys, because this is how the league sells. You need superheroes. There's a reason when you go to your Cineplex, when it opens back up, there are going to be superhero movies. We like these things. This is kind of part of contemporary storytelling. We love the superhero. It's not that we won't do kind of the ensemble cast in the Ocean's 11 every once in a while, but we like a superhero.
Kevin, I'm different from you guys, because I have a 93-year-old mother and she's grown up with basketball. Because the other night she said, "Look at Trey, he's doing his Reggie Miller when he took the bow." And I'm like, "Geez, I had to think hard to remember."
Oh, bless her heart.
Yeah, yeah, and she's she also has a vested interest watching her son calling games too. But that's a story for another time. When I look at the whole marketing thing, and you said something that really kind of, man, it's like the uncle that drinks too much at the party, where we all say that, but the league, do they really want, like, they must really want LeBron in there or Steph in there? And then that filters out to comments from other coaches and other players, and like, oh, well, you know, the league's not going to give us that call. The league doesn't want us at the party. And then that stuff starts filtering out, like Eric was saying, like wrestling. And I think you have to be careful with some of that marketing, don't you?
Sure. But, I mean, let's not forget, Steph Curry, up until quite recently, and I think recently, like 2014-15, like, that franchise was, I mean, yeah, the Bay Area is, I think, the number five market in the country, but, like, no one thought of the Warriors as a team that the league wanted to have around, right? Like, yeah, Steph was picked sixth or seventh, I think seventh, right? You know, like, he was in the league for a good 4 or 5 years, right? And nobody was saying, oh, those calls he's getting. You know, I think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, I don't have a problem. By the way, I am not endorsing that the league should stack decks, or, you know, the old David Stern snarky comment that his ideal matchup in the finals is the Lakers versus the Lakers, which I think he said in kind of 2004-05 and that general era. But you sure you have to be careful. And again, this is why I say, look, an alternate model would be like, we just market the league. You know, we really market, you know, the Bucks as sort of a small market made good. Giannis is sort of has a very personal story, and he's humble, and he didn't go to the sexy market, and he stayed. And look at him playing these guys in Brooklyn. This is kind of this new evil empire. I'm kind of aping from my former colleague Ethan Strauss at The Athletic, who wrote this great piece about, hey, the league should stop worrying about, you know, oh, we need the Lakers, we need the Warriors, we need the Knicks. You know, we really actually need to kind of market the league as a whole, and rivalries between teams, irrespective of the size of the market. And I do think that that is, I agree with what you're saying. But the reality is, look, I don't think that anybody should put the thumb on the scale for anybody. But, you know, you do need to, this is a product to be marketed, as much as that might offend our sensibilities. And within the confines of a 2.5-hour game, it should offend our sensibilities. The game is the game. But you do need people who generate, in a very competitive marketplace, interest in basketball over putting in whatever the flavor of the day is on Netflix, the new true crime documentary or whatever the hell else they're putting out there. Because, like, I don't take for as an article of faith, I don't know about you guys, that, like, basketball and the NBA will be around forever, right? Like, this is a very, very competitive marketplace right now. Sports had a real antitrust advantage, at least in the United States. It always had a leg up on other brands of entertainment. Those days, I know 14-year-olds, and I don't know many who watch games. You know, like, they might know who these guys are as kind of general, you know, cultural figures, but the league has to worry. It has to watch its back. There's too much competition for the attention of people at home when they go out, whatever they're doing, just to assume that people are going to come to a product four nights a week for 2.5 hours. I just think those days are over. You have to have these guys.
You know what, Kevin? We're up against the break. We could probably keep this going for another 10, 20
yes.
minutes, if not an hour, because to your point, I'll maybe end at this, and I'll give you 30 seconds to weigh in if you want. But I couldn't agree with you more, especially when we factor now in, and I know you guys stateside have moved on a little bit quicker than perhaps we have in Canada, but especially post-COVID, as people, some that were hammered financially with jobs or otherwise, the demand for the dollar, the demand for time, and some people that maybe don't feel safe going out as much anymore or entering buildings again, all that, when you factor that into the demand for our time and our interest with other shows and movies and just our personal lives and everything else, I think it will be very interesting to see how the NBA, let alone all of pro sports, pivots and tries to market and build moving forward, and not just around individuals, but the game itself. I think it's going to be fascinating to watch.
I can't wait to see what the strategy is. And I think it'll probably be a hybrid. And yeah, you're right. I'll come back on off season. I could talk about this particular macro issue all day. I think it's fascinating.
Hey, Kevin, we appreciate your time today. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Kev.
Hey, thanks for having me.
There is Kevin Arnovitz from ESPN again. His article went up a couple of days ago. You can find it at ESPN.com. Why Luka Doncic and Trae Young represent the next generation of NBA superstars. I do have a couple more thoughts on that, Jonesy, and hopefully we can squeeze them in before the end of the show. We'll take the break, come back with more Smith & Jones right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, thanks to CJ Miles and Kevin Arnovitz for joining us. And Jonesy, I just wanted to follow up on that point I made to Kevin towards the end there. And I know you're a little bit different. I like to poke fun at you in terms of the movies and the TV shows and stuff. I love sports. I watch a ton of sports. You're at another level. But it is really going to be interesting to see how not just the NBA, but all leagues and the industry in general, television, radio, et cetera, pivots and finds new ways to bring in viewers and listeners and to keep ears and eyeballs, because there is so much to be distracted by now and so much pull for our dollar, and many people don't have as many dollars to spend or time to give.
True, very true. And to me, that's why sports, in my eyes, stands the test of time. It's always on. It's the last bastion of live TV that you don't watch on a TV show or PVR or something like that. You can't have a big game on and then go be out and say, oh, I'll watch it when I get home on video. No, unless you're actively staying away, you're going to find out. So I still think sports has the upper hand on a lot of programming in that sense.
Baseball Central is coming up next, then Writer's Block and Tim and Friends later on tonight. The Toronto Blue Jays in action against the Chicago White Sox as well. We're back again tomorrow at 1 o'clock Eastern with more Smith and Jones right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.